All right, everybody, I hope you've got your big shill mics, and welcome to our bullshit platform. We're back with another weekly sheep farm podcast. This is episode 193, and today we've got Johnny Vedmore joining us. But before we start, I'll just go through the normal rigmarole of reminding everybody what we do. The format is simple. We try and release a minimum of 4 shows a month. Members get full podcast plus download, and non-members get part one. That might be an hour or an hour and a half. All new shows are released on Saturdays. Podcasts are always on sheepfarm.co.uk, but we also put part one on Podomatic, and they send them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible, Google, Apple, and a number of others. We also put part one on Rumble and Odyssey. All videos, all the Matrix videos are backed up on Odyssey. For some reason, it doesn't back up the ones that take over an hour, though. I don't know why, but it automatically backs them up from YouTube. Please subscribe to his website. You'll get email notifications for all new shows. There's no cost there or anything like that. But even if you don't, it doesn't matter because all the podcasts are released on a Saturday. Thanks for all the comments, and thanks for all the direct messages to our big nostriled friend here drinking his glass of witch piss. Join us on Instagram as well. Thanks for all the orders that I get from my Health Bunker supplement shop for vitamin C powder. Remember, use the promo code which is in the description for Health Bunker products. There's some new products there. There's some vitamin D3, a new Magsorb, I've called it, because it helps the absorption of magnesium, and a zinc immune product. We've got a few new products coming out as well, so stay tuned for them. And there's a few other bits of information, like the Richard Dior donation information as well. So let's get on with the show. I hope you enjoy it. Johnny were great company. We chatted for about 2.5 hours, I think the full show is, and we talked about many stuff. We didn't have any notes. We just sat and talked. It was a great chat. We've had some great guests on over the last 3-4 years nearly now. And Johnny's one of those returning guests who comes on and we can just talk for hours. And this one, we're a lot more laid back. We weren't actually talking directly about his work or our work. We were just talking about things in general, and it really knitted together. In the second part of this podcast, we actually talk about our favourite films and things like that and what links they have back to what's going on now. So that was another interesting conversation. I hope you can join us for that. If not, we'll see you again.
But
all right, welcome back to the Sheep Farm podcast. It's a Thursday night, a rainy one. Autumn's hit us round the face as usual in Yorkshire. In fact, it's been autumn for the last 9 months, I think, in sunny Yorkshire. Joining our Chris, who's in sunny Cambridge. I can see sun shining through those curtains he's got pulled on there because it's too bright for him.
Not sun, that fact, it's my lamp.
It's your lamp, is it? Right, I'll let you off there. It's been absolutely pissing down here. And we'll ask Johnny. Johnny Vedmore's with us again. It's been a year since he's been on. Yeah, I can't believe it. Is it sunny where you are?
Oh, no. You type it into that authoritarian Google of yours.
In Goggle, yeah.
What is the rainiest city in Britain? And they will tell you every time it's Cardiff. It's Cardiff. Right now, outside, grey skies, showering it down.
That's a summer day in Wales.
I know. It's basically been. So it's man, summer's been so grey this year. It seems like it almost seems contrived, you know, to be the Orwellian conspiracy theorist, even though I might be. But you just got like grey days all through the week and then a couple of quick sunny days. Weekend, all very convenient. Yeah. No one really complains. They just go to work looking like dull and
automatrons.
Yeah, I mean that's the stereotypical vision, the bowler hat sort of suit wearing.
I wish it were those days. It might be better than in them days, but I don't know about that.
I'll tell you something funny about that, fellas. When I moved to London when I was like 19, and I worked in a hotel on Bishopsgate. And I was fresh from Yorkshire. I'd only been to London once or twice before. And I remember standing outside the cafe as everyone's walking past to go to the city to work. And I'm fresh from Yorkshire. And I thought, what is wrong with everybody? Everyone looks so angry and miserable. And then flash forward 20 years, ended up working on the same street. Walking
looking,
from London Bridge all the way to Bishopsgate.
Looking miserable as
looking
shit.
Miserable and miserable. Stressed.
You know, I went to London, you know, and it was about 2006. I was 2005, 2006. Well, it was when the London bombing happened, in actual fact. It's about around that time, because I was going to move to France. So I went to London and everybody looks so sad compared to Wales. Everybody's like skipping around in Wales. You go past everybody, they go, hello, you know, and they're all very happy. Well, I say that, of course, there's lots of people who are miserable in their own world, but it's much more cheerful. Go to London, I was like, oh man, these people are so terrible. They're so angry. They're so sad all the time. Went across to France, and then I lived in France for like 6 months. And then I like down in Lyon. And then I came back and I was like, shit, man, Londoners look like the happiest people in the world compared to the French. I stood in one, and this is a true story. This me and my ex were standing in, I can't even remember what it's called now. It's near Saxe Gambetta in Lyon. It's like this big square that they've got. And it's like where all of the main shops are around this massive square. It's quite a nice city, Lyon. It's pretty. Second biggest city in France, you know, lots of people around. It was a hot summer day. You're talking 32 degrees, and it was a weekend, and it was in, you know, August. Everybody was out on the streets. There was loads of French people all just down the road. And I had just been like, you know, I had been living in France for a while, and I said to my ex, I said, can you do me a favor? And she was born in Korea, adopted by French parents. And so she's very French. She looks Korean now.
As French she could be.
Yeah. And she was standing next to me. I was like, can you point out one person who's smiling? Just one person. And it's this busy summer day. There's loads of people. There's these like, you know, they've got metro. So you've got all of these different points where loads of people just empty out onto this place, this like main central point. And we were there, and there was only one person in about a 10-minute period of us trying to spot who smiled. One person out of all of these crowds of people. And that was really like France for me. And what was amazing, and probably, you know, predictable, and I don't mean this to belittle the French people, of course, but I was living in a road called Avenue Franklin Roosevelt that was up in Brome, near all like Avenue Winston Churchill, you know, Avenue whoever saved our ass during the war. And I was living on Avenue Franklin Roosevelt, and either side of that there's like these, I can't, they call stuff like banyous, or they're like the La Haine, completely derelict of life because no money's been put into there, but filled with people who are either black, they're Arabic, or they're from some other country, and they're all stuck in these big estates, like, you know, dystopia personified.
And how long ago was that, Johnny?
That was 2006.
Right.
And this is, I mean, you go back to, if you watch a movie called La Haine.
I remember watching that film.
It's amazing. Vincent Cassel.
I had a romantic vision of France. And then I watched that film and thought, what? Is it like that in France?
No, it is. No, Avenue Franklin Roosevelt is the romantic vision of France. It's beautiful. Got a tram track down the middle. It's got all of these little, bakeries and butchers and
shops.
Oh, and it's so gorgeous. And
people with oozes.
Go off the side. And it's just a ghetto, like a proper gangster-ridden ghetto, that where they don't got any hope. No one's got a job. All the statistically jobless are here. And the white people are all living in the one street. And it's completely like the life was completely different. And French white people just didn't go into those areas most of the time. And I discovered that because I was British, I could just walk in there and I'd be looking for weed or the what, and they'd like, people would come out towards me like a gang of kids. I start talking in English, and they're like, Oh, and they're so happy because suddenly they realize, oh, I'm going to meet someone who's going to have a good conversation with me, who's going to treat me like a human, who's,
Yeah.
you know, all of those different things. And they, you know, they've got like loads of bit, like they know about British culture here and American culture there. And they kind of see the English speaking world as combined. So they get really excited. And I just discovered that, like, I could exist. And this is something I had conversations with white French people about too. Was I felt like I could exist in both sort of scenarios. I can
Both
hang around
paradigms.
with, yeah, and there was like no issue, but the when you talk to white French people about what they think about the situation, it gets dark, man. It gets
Well,
dark.
I mean, just to skip back, talking to Theodore Roosevelt, right? Our granddad was called Roosevelt Theodore Kindred. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Theodore Roosevelt Kindred. So that's our black side in Chicago.
The love of the guys who do amazing things or are seen as the most important people
yes.
in the world. To you know, people want a little bit of that, don't they?
Well, at that time, Roosevelt was seen for the black people as very liberal. They didn't know his obviously his background, but they thought he was for the coloured folks, when in reality they're still segregated old army and anyway.
I did a load of work on Kermit Roosevelt Jr. because
right.
that was for the third Schwab article that I wrote in the Schwab series. It was the Kissinger Continuum. It's really about the formation of the Young Global Leaders and how it came from a CIA funded program that was run by Kermit Roosevelt Jr. His father, it's a weird story, his father was really like depressed. He was at least projected out within the press as being suffering from depression. And he's in the army and he dies in 1942 in Alaska. Can you imagine that you're dying in the war in Alaska? Something's gotta be wrong there.
Yeah.
And they say the next day, oh yes, he had they say something like he had melancholy or whatever.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
And he ended himself, and that was just as his son was working for the what would be OSS.
OSS. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then he became central to Kermit Roosevelt Jr. became the person who planned out the first two coups the CIA ever did. So Egypt with King Farouk and Iran with Mohammad Mossadegh, he planned the whole thing. He was the central figure in it. And he was such an interesting man, massive anti-Zionist.
Right. Isn't it strange? We're a strange mix of anti-Zionists and pro-Zionists all throughout that. And you have to wonder whether that was just, I don't know, to keep the sort of war footing against each other. Because they're still fighting for the same sort of plan, weren't they? When you read back the pro-Zionists and the anti-Zionists in the CIA, we're all fighting the same people.
Yeah, yeah. It started off very anti-Zionist, though.
Yeah.
Like the majority of the CIA were anti-Zionist, but the White House went straight Zionist.
Yeah.
And there's something about the friction that causes. I've been talking about Hegelian stuff today with Joe Allen on my show. And we'd be talking about Musk and the potential of him being the antithesis of created antithesis of the thesis. And then that leads to a synthesizing, doesn't it? That's the Hegelian dialectic. And what I think sometimes happens is they create that conflict on purpose so that acts as a synthesis. And as Courtney Turner says, it's like a Jacob's ladder. You just go up to another level then, and they keep playing this same game over and over again.
We've got two polar guys. You've got the Gates and you've got Musk, both supposedly these billionaire so-called... we've all told the story, but they're all sort of going for the same thing, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And Oh, we're having this conversation today because I was talking about Musk being this potential constructed antithesis. Because if you did choose to have a constructed antithesis who would do what Musk did, then his life would be exactly as Musk's life would be. You know, he's disconnected from America. That's one important thing because he's basically infiltrating America. He's disconnected by birth from America. Wealth, massive wealth already there. Dad, like owning mine, parts of mines and
Emerald
stuff like
Mine,
that.
yeah.
Yeah. His mum, her father, of course, is Haldeman, who basically creates the first technocratic ink. So already that they're like, in the 1930s, he's
Yeah.
already like, you know, creating something which is going to be what his grandson does. And his mother is such a PR genius, and she was able to see the opportunities. And there's this sudden redesigning of Musk. It's as sudden externally over a 10-year period. But it's sudden in style and how much he gets funded over a much shorter period. It's like, you know, his early days are really suspicious,
Yes.
and he just suddenly becomes this, like, given contracts, given things by big companies, by NASA, by other things. What the hell's going on? How the hell can this young guy? But this has got to be a gifted program. This has got to be, he's got to go, have gone through a gifted program. I think it's a Microsoft gifted program because Zip2Net archive site shows that he says he worked for Microsoft. And
Which means
some
it's
people.
IBM, which means then you're going back to basically Wall Street, aren't you?
Yes, it's the same thing. He's
CIA.
clearly lined up. He's been lined up for something, and I mean, now he's talking about going into Trump's cabinet or whatever you call
Yeah, this. I mean,
That
this is
bloody
predictable, though.
that
This is
wrestling
like,
show that you're watching in America.
oh man,
Come
yeah.
underwear.
It's quite unbelievable what how. For me, I find it even more unbelievable that people don't see it because, you know, he's creating this Klaus Schwab Davosian, the tools you need to build that world, the world where you own nothing and be happy, the world where you all go around with your electric cars, the world where you have big boreholes that go underneath, the
You eat
world where you
beetle
have
burgers
free
and
internet wherever you go in your mega city, the
yeah.
mega city idea where AI is constructing these buildings and they're basically going up within a day. You could build massive skyscrapers and other things. I mean, I know that seems unreal, but
Not
once
from
you've
a
got,
25D printer.
yeah, the whole situation is changing technologically exponentially. It always has.
Can you
It's
remember that
insane.
film, Talking to Megacities? What was the film that Leonardo DiCaprio with the dream one, Chris, where
Oh,
they're having dream
Inception.
Inception, and that's what they were building megacities in that dream, weren't they?
Well, they were moving them around, weren't they, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the future is so fucking esoteric that we can't quite understand it, and they're going to use that against us the entire time. And they've already mapped that out with the idea of fifth generation warfare, and they got nudge units going on, and they got all sorts of things. It's all psyops all around us. So Elon Musk seems like a simple choice, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Everyone likes Elon Musk, though, don't they? Because he gave free speech back to Twitter stroke X or whatever. But then at the same time, he's lining everyone up for a frigging Neuralink planted into their head just by removing it. It creeps me out every time I think about it. Just by removing a little disc of skull. I said, Johnny, I've asked people at work in my job, like the youngsters, you know, if I've explained the Neuralink, what, and they're like, what's that? And I say, you know, Elon Musk wants from. Well, if it were tested, right? Yeah. I'd have it. Like, really? It's Not just one
shocking.
or
The
two. It's not just one or
shocking. And
two.
they'll be able to put the internet straight into your head.
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. As long as it's tested, you know, I'd probably wait a while and then
Yeah.
I'd have
I'd probably watch that film that was filmed of Professor Delgado doing that bull where he got it to stop and change course when he wanted it to in 1959 or wherever it was.
All that bloody prison for where they blow their heads up when they go out of
Yeah,
line.
yeah.
Too much
But
of a
I mean,
blunder, however.
Elon Musk, it's quite blatantly some sort of military stroke intelligence set up anyway, because you can't mean if us three said, do you know what, I'm going to fucking go to Russia, I'm going to look to buy some intercontinental ballistic missiles from them. All right, yeah, you're just not going to get that far, are you?
Isn't it amazing as well when you get a news feed? It has the X or the Twitter, whatever sign. Like it's part of the system now, isn't it? It's part of the
And it's a shit name, innit? Let's face it. Twitter was a fantastic name. If you're going to, Twitter was a fantastic, and I don't use social media, but Twitter was a good name.
He set up X.com in like 2000.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
you know, and he was just like straight away. Again, it's probably not him, though he has a lot of his mum within him. Yes. I think what happened is that
maybe more than we think.
If you rationalize genetic probabilities and possibilities, what's gonna rise to prominence in a certain area that exists, something that allows those genetics to thrive, is all going to be dependent. And we have this idea, like, you know, if you mix genes and maybe you'll have character traits come out, and you do. You know, people's children have their character in some way, so something else is passed on too, but not always. And I watch lots of big families, and I go back through family histories, and it's like most big families that have lasted a long time have just one person in each generation that manages to like just push it along and just hold on to it until they have like a quick burst with a couple of really good ones, and then it goes back down to just one person struggling along to keep the dynastical power line going. You know, it happens when it does happen. With Musk's case, he got a bit of his granddad and he got a bit of his mum, and that makes him really he finds it very easy, I think, to detach from human emotive. I'm not saying he's necessarily even a narcissist, but I you know, there's an element there, of course. I think he's one of those ones who would use that, has a certain amount of control and sees what he's doing himself. I think he understands his own behavior really well, and he analyzes things really well.
And that could be from, you know, one of these programs like what were the Nazis doing? Wunderkind. The children of, you know, they actually said they were going to place these children in strategic places, and that could be the mother, and then the Musk, who's then followed through, like Omen, in like Chris goes on about Omen, the sergeant that talks to Damien in Omen 2, saying we've been following you all your life, type of thing.
Oh, I love that movie. That's the one with the pecking out the face on the end by a truck. I was like, one of my favorite things to ever. I was like 6 years old when I first saw it. I was like, oh my god, that's amazing.
I saw it when I was about six, really young, down when we used to watch bloody Video Nasties. And I was terrified of horror films, and I just remember coming out.
You're still watching, sofa, you mad bastard.
As not when I was really up, I wouldn't even dare it. And that bloody nanny jump sound goes, "I love you, Damien." When you're up, okay. Oh god!
but going back to the like the Machiavellian parasite. When I did some of the World Economic Forum stuff, I call them the Machiavellian parasite, because if you think about it, going back to the gene, that's that parasitical gene that basically just sucks everybody energy out, if you like, then he can stand in front of a camera like Gates can, like Boris Johnson, even though he's a low pleb in comparison, and lie barefaced to the camera and not think he's doing anything wrong.
Yeah. And there's gotta be something in there. Yeah, there's got that makes the there's something else I wanted to, just before I forget. I think that be seeing that his grandfather was big into transhumanism and the future being, you know, mapped out in some
way. That's fortunate for him, isn't it?
Technology. Yeah, well, it meant that he understood that genetic superiority was going to be something that they could play on if it worked out. And I just think it worked out. I think it doesn't always work out. That's what I really wanted to say. But I think his grandfather probably matched up with someone who had certain character traits by looking at character traits and looking at things like that within the family. And then that's happened again because, of, you know, maybe Mae Musk married Errol Musk, who they weren't an extremely happy couple. Maybe they married because he was very good at creating wealth. And you needed the three different genetics or four different genetics from each of the different lines to spark all together to make something that was going to be able to handle the four. And yeah, the chances of that are like infinitely small,
but also
not if you class in that all of the people in the world exist.
One thing I've been saying recently is that genetic, everyone looks at eugenics as a bad thing, right? I'm not saying it's not, but there has to be a plus side or they wouldn't do it.
There
has to be an upside. So the question is, why are they running these programs, transhuman, all these programs that they're running? There's probably two that I can think of, I mean, you probably think of more, but there's superhuman or super type person. NSY's been all that, Iron Man type nonsense. And then you've got the longevity, the one to live forever, the cocoon type scenario. Where it takes them back to, hence why a lot of these people like Peter Thiel are doing blood infusions from 16-year-old boys.
I you know, all of these guys are looking at the future like their grandparents looked at the future, and their grandparents, they were like, you know, systematically involved in some bad shit through that period, and the same thing is going to happen again. And that is maybe, again, an expression of genetics. And you've got to ask yourself that simple question. It is a case of asking, do you believe, and all of the people at home and all of the people who hear this, do you believe yourself that there are good genes? Because if you do, if you think there are good genes, any good character traits, any good traits for the outside, external, physical, if you believe that there's good, then there's got to be bad there too.
Yes.
And so it becomes a point where you're like, you know that this technology is something that they're going to walk towards, but it's going to be unpopular. And all of the technologies of the future is like that. Same with AI as well. You know, they're giving you an idea of what it's like. They're flashing it in your face, but they're not telling you the real deal. They're not giving you the proper lowdown. And that's one of my problems with Musk, is that he comes out and he's like, warning AI, warning AI, warning AI, and implementing that same AI at the same time.
And also, they've come up with a situation where we're all living in this mouse-topia or mouse-utopia system that actually produces that type of negativity and fear. Because so you're going to produce that type of human, aren't you? That someone somewhere knows that if you put all that stress and strain on humans and toxic shit and sludge and crap, that they're going to produce these awful people.
Oh, man. Oh, the world is full of peeps. They're full of, like, really, I go around recording a lot on the streets. You know, I just walk around the streets with camera, look a little bit for some action, something going on, mainly police auditing, mainly recording buskers and musicians. I got a nice little audio setup now, so I can just like click down a mic in front of them and just record them and produce the sound later to bring it up to quality. So it means that I'm having really fun meeting people, but people are strange, man. People are strange. They've been made stranger, and everybody's going out and doing really bad stuff for themselves, and trying to give themselves a feeling that they're infallible and they're never wrong, and that feeling instilled heightens their defense of their ego, because they've got then a load of lies to hide with usually a very small ego given by society, and then you're just so you got explosions here and there, but at the end of the day, people aren't ready to hear truth because they're not built for it anymore. They've been made unhealthy in mind, body, spirit.
But, I mean, certainly after probably I'll call it vax brain, and possibly 5G as well in collusion, and the shit that's been sprayed on a daily basis across length and breadth of this country.
Everything is a combination. It all works together, and you know, everything they put, you've got like a vaccine regime that's just insane for little kids. You've got them being just given gruel, really. They what kids mostly get is like basically akin, if you look on average, to being some sort of really low form gruel that Oliver Twist wouldn't have even got that bad, you know. Yeah. I think, but it's a continuation that we are just continuing on the same problems in society are there. They look different because of technology, because we think we're more advanced, because we've got all of these different things that we've constructed, like ideologies and philosophies to kind of deal with these things. But we really aren't that much better off than relative than the people in the Victorian era. No. It is come to a point where they're just taking and taking and taking. And that's a human nature, the greed, power. You know, they go to the table to eat power. They share like table after table of power. And we don't go to those tables because we have no want to go to get power. Mm. But that's what controls society. So the people who don't want power are the ones who should be at the table of power.
Yeah, or at least have a face there.
Yeah. But we're talking about Victorian times. It's getting like that, though, isn't it? Like the, you know, the rulers of this shit show are getting richer, and then there's more people on the street. How can that work in a modern?
Well, I would say they're getting more powerful as well, Chris. More, draconian.
We're industrial revolution time. We're in an this is a fourth industrial revolution. They said it to your face. They said this is a fourth industrial revolution. They said it's amazing.
You're we the Luddites?
I try and tell people, go to the World Economic Forum Flickr site, man. Yeah. Go down the photos. Go to about 2010, 2011. You got these 9 slides where they show you the training that they're given. And it's like, it's got literally population control written on it. Misinformation from them. What they're doing is saying, you know, you can, a lie can help you out. They talking about no one retires anymore, young people going into work. They talk about all of these things, forced equity in a way that's going to be undermining, you know, like the whole you'll own nothing and be happy thing, mapped out one world government, written with 3 of them all hugging each other. Hey, we're from different religions, but now we're unified. And it's just literally, it's insane. But you try and get people to go and have a little look, and most people are like, oh, that's I don't want to have to read what they're up to. And it's like, you really shouldn't be reading what they're up to, because what they're up to is they've designed our future. People like Elon Musk implement our future. So his vision, and this is the one thing that really I keep trying to find an answer to. I talked with Joe Allen about it today on the show, and it was really interesting to talk about it. Is, you know, people keep giving consent to people like Musk all of the time. They just keep continuing to invest in someone like Musk. And he's doing the thing that the Davosians are doing. He's doing the things that the World Economic Forum is doing. It's not like he's different. And suddenly he's the antithesis of this future system. He's saying, oh, no, you don't want to listen to them. They're not very good guys. But they're designing their plans show they're designing the electric roads for the electric cars and all of the system to use and all of the different things that he's implementing. It's just it's a revolution of fifth generation warfare proportion. You don't, it's like, not only you don't own anything and you're happy, it's you don't know anything. Yeah. And you're unhappy, but you can't fucking do anything about it.
And also, the weird thing is, you think that unhappiness is actually a happy state. Mm-hmm. So you've been convinced that is normal.
That's like, is it a Freudian line? Like, there's some one of the psychologists of the past said that the line of happiness is underneath happy, or our natural state is underneath happy, and that's why we feel happy, and when we go back down we dip a little bit and we still remain under happy. Mm. So under happy rather than unhappy, you know.
Yeah.
And then you I don't think we can solve that. Without someone coming along and saying, oh maybe this is the point. Elon Musk is able to come along and say, I'll put a chip in your brain, mate.
Yeah,
put a chip in your brain, you won't feel any of
the Harari guy. What did he say? What would we be able to do when, you know, no one's got jobs and, you know, they need distraction? And he says, better video games, more video games.
Yeah.
So he's telling you that the Neuralink included with, you know, VR or whatever the hell is going to be by then. you know, it will be like Ready Player One, won't it? Which is a step away from the Matrix.
You did a great analogy, like a backfire analogy, but you couldn't even see it because Yuval Noah Harari is a complete and he's detached from the reality
the
of
gimp.
The people he's talking about. He's definitely on a string, that's for sure. One of his is either 2019 or 2020, but he did a World Economic Forum talk, and he was talking about football. He was saying all of the players on the pitch are playing to an end. He was trying to show how globalism is like football, you know. You've got all of this, you've got these two different teams, you've got all these people in the stadium, and you've got the officials and et cetera, et cetera. And that's how cozy globalism is. It's just everybody working together. But the fact is that only, what, between 10 to 70,000 people fit in most stadiums, and the majority of people don't get to get involved in that society. They're really far out. The majority are now pushed out. That is a perfect representation of globalism. About, say, on average, 35,000 people are in control of nearly everybody. That's a perfect example of globalism. It's like, you know, their type of globalism, stakeholder capitalism. It's like, who is going to be like, Three companies who own all the stake in society, and it's going to be all of us.
Yeah. If you remember, when they were trying to do Rockefeller for his antitrust laws, and they had that octopus and blah. And really, all they've done with changing the laws have turned the world into that octopus.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do. They create the tragedy that leads to them having the
more.
Yeah, well, the ability to, because they change legislation and they change law and they change everything else around us by creating events here and create. I mean, if they wanted to cause, they for me, I see, I have researched inside and out of the world of globalism, how it works with intelligence and how that expresses in the military. And I, all of the time, what I feel now is that, you know, we already know it. All of the perpetual limited warfare that was going on, and then the big wars like Iraq and Afghanistan, when they happened, they pushed loads of people out. All of a sudden, those people were all destabilized. Their next generation would be also destabilized, and it mean they would move more. And I think that I said it in a monologue today, like the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was making us globalist without us realizing it was happening, because they have been trying to make it so that they can move everybody all around the map. Make it so that you no longer have your culture left, you no longer have your traditions left, you no longer have anything around you that you resembles your parents' lives, let alone your grandparents' lives. I mean, it's what they want to do is make it so that if they you won't come to globalism, globalism will come to you. They will make every single person round them out. They will pick them up. And they will move them in all different ways, including by disturbing them with war, disturbing them with conflict, torturing them with policies implemented by policy institutes that are clearly against the best interests of human beings nearly all of the time. They're constantly disturbing everything and mixing everybody around. And, you know, I really come to a conclusion. There's loads of people saying, oh, that's the great replacement. And I dig that, but I don't think that's what we're seeing, because that's not what happens in reality. You're seeing the great synthesis. You're seeing
the change, the transition, the world
being synthesized together. You know, and they're using, I think it's a good thing to, like, way to say it and understand it, because they're using all of these Hegelian dialectics all over the place to synthesize up to the next level. And all they're doing that within projected, within society, within culture, within race, within every single thing they can do. They're pushing people out, and they're making us all the same, and they're making globalism come to us, whether we want it or not.
Yeah, but because by using this very system, Zoom, that we're using today, We are globalists, sadly, whether we like it or not.
That's the same with most of the technology you've got to use.
Yeah.
And you can't get away with not using it because, you know, that's the way it is. This is, you know, we played Monopoly when we were young. Maybe we played it just so that they made it just so that we could get used to the idea that one person owns everything. Because we keep doing, you know, you play, how many Monopoly games have you played where everybody still owns everything? I mean, really, that's not the world we're living in. And we know that's not the world. They've told us that's not the world. And that's what's occurring outside. And then it becomes, okay, what do they do? Well, they give us tokens. They give us little tokens that'll have expiry dates on. That's what we'll replace.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious as well. All this immigration thing that's happening in England, all this trouble, it's happening in every country at the same time in lockstep.
Great.
No one seems to think that there's any suspicious.
Yeah. Like everything else that's happening. Yeah. You know, everything else, whether it's online harms or the pandemic or everything happened in every country, more or less.
Exactly. Teaching your kids.
Yeah, trannies teaching your kids.
It's not just been going on for a little bit. It's been going on for a long time. They've been planning and mapping this out, and every time they could push it in that direction. And however much we like now, we're able to identify it, we're unable to stop it. So we've got, there is an element where you have to be like, okay, that future's written, and we're about 20 years behind. So the only chance we're going to change, they're going to get about 20 years head start on us. So we got to think rationally, where are they going to be down the line 20 years from now? And let's plan out the next stage there and take the power away from them. Because that's usually as well how political cycles work, like 10, 15 year sort of cycles. And right now, I've been writing an article, which I have finished. It's ready to go up. I'm so proud of I'm proud of the article, but I'm proud of the cover art, man. I spent a whole day like trying to work out how to. It's called Blair and Clinton, the Third Way Dossier, and it's really about how they were kind of implementing a CIA aligned sort of political ideology that Anthony Giddens introduced called Third Way. And it basically means you kind of like head towards the center, you purge the left or right of your party, and you replace all of the solutions that only can be found on the right or left of politics with either austerity or war, economic levers of power. It's really what New Democrats were. So they say it out loud. It's not like this is a conspiracy at all. Clinton said, okay, we've left the left wing, we've gone over to the center. Now, to leave the left wing means you've got to purge them out of your party. Now, we've seen this process in Britain on multiple occasions for the left wing recently, and what we currently are experiencing looks very much like they're still adopting the same Blairite third way politics. Because while Clinton implemented this, and this is really interesting, oh my God, this is super interesting. While Clinton implemented this in 1992, working on the Clinton campaign was our current Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper. And she's working until early 93. At the same time, Blair, Brown, Prescott, other ones are coming over. Ed Balls already lives out there in Boston. He's working at Harvard, and he's hanging around with Robert Reich, who's come up in the news recently with comments against Trump, and Larry Summers and people, who's about to have hanging around with Epstein, along with Clinton, who's about to be hanging around with Epstein. Because remember, in 1993 was when Epstein walked through the door with Mark Middleton, found hanging shotgun to the chest a couple of years ago.
Just an accident, that.
Just an accident. Accident. And he's going to visit the White House 17 times after that, Epstein. So, I mean, it's like he becomes best mates with this It's clearly CIA. I had someone on my show the other day who's clearly CIA, Bill Clinton. I mean, he's got so many links, it's unbelievable. And this sort of adoption of a policy, well, all of the British came over and they all went, oh, la, 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 we want this. But they were the young generation, because Blair and Brown had both gone on something already called the International Visitors Leadership Program, which is an American, it seems like a deep state program. Thousands of people go through it. It started off just during the war, in a sense, because it was piloted by a Nelson Rockefeller scheme in South America to kind of like spread positive propaganda.
Positive, yeah.
Infiltration, because they were scared the Nazis would make a base for themselves in South America and they would be able to attack America. So, and then that led on to them creating the International Visitors Leadership Program, where they had people come over to America and study with, like, you know, with the boys, yeah, and learn a little bit and become a better leader. Well, both Brown and Blair went on that. I think they went on that twice before, in like 1984 for Brown, 1986 for Blair.
Just after that was just before then, the Young Global Leader and Bilderberger meetings.
That's like 1993 is when you're going to have the first the Global Leaders for Tomorrow, where Tony Blair and Gordon Brown are both at too, and that's also CIA. That's so it's like selection process, and then that goes up to main training scheme, and then of course we know 4 years later it put into power. And now, who did Tony Blair take over from? Because he took over from John Smith, the legendary John Smith, probably the last proper socialist who was the head of the Labour Party. Corbyn was disappointing for me, so anyway, but he was a proper socialist, was John Smith, and died in office, of course. I find that suspicious,
very suddenly.
And then they were able to implement their third way agenda.
Yeah, we did a podcast, a presentation on Blair a few years ago, didn't we, Chris? About his early schooling at Fetters, and I forget the other one in Durham. And while he was at his first school, I forget what it was called now, Choice. No, anyway, we're in Durham. We're a Durham school. His father had a stroke, and the teacher was a known paedophile, and he comforted him by sitting him on his knee. There were two known paedophiles at that school at that particular time, and both of them were close to Blair. Then he went to Fetters, and there were two known paedophiles there, and then there was a baron who used to come in and give him business teaching, and he was linked to the Kakara boys school as well. Baron, I forget his surname now, Baron something or other, who was caught taking, he worked for MI6, MI5, and he was caught taking kids down into Southampton somewhere, or Brighton, something like that.
Oh, could it be Eastbourne?
Yeah, it was Eastbourne.
Peter Ball?
No, it wasn't Peter Ball. I'd have to get my notes out.
There was a load of them. I wrote about a load of them when we were down in that area.
But these five, it was virtually impossible that he would have escaped five known paedophiles. Mm-hmm. It's just impossible. And you know the story of obviously being called Miranda, don't you?
No. Well, maybe I do, but...
Yeah.
I
well, the two, when he went to... he left law school, went... They go in... What do they call it when they go in? They go in to be trained to be a lawyer, don't they? And it was training... Bar. Yeah, they get the bar, but they go to a law firm, and one of the head barristers trains them and takes them under his wing. Well, that's where he met Sherry Blair. But one of the people he were training with was the two fat ladies, Clarice Dickinson or whatever she were called. And she said everybody called him Miranda when he was there. This was in Tatler magazine. Yeah. And they said, why did they call him Miranda? And she said, well, let's put it this way. He liked the tea boys better than he did the ladies.
he's got a face like an evil criminal who lives inside your dreams. You know,
he came out of lockdown looking like bloody Nosferatu.
I know. But it's almost like it's just like, you know, the mask drops and the eyebrows raise in a more pointier way. Like, you know, all of a sudden. But he was always he was straight away, he was never one who you can say could see the future because he was being shown the future.
Mm.
So what intelligence and these deep state programs are really good at doing is saying to people, if you are confident about this happening and you're in a leadership position, you're going to make it happen, whatever happens, and we want it to happen. So it will happen. And they give them confidence that it will happen, and they walk towards it and it make it happen. Yeah. You know, that's as simple as
And by the way, we've got these pictures of you, if you don't play ball, with the goat.
There's a massive load of that, but there's also a massive load of party boat where, you know, you get on the party boat, you can have everything you want, all of the good stuff, but if, you're never leaving the party boat. So
you're
on there for life. Like, you know, I think people, they there's an element of that, but with Blair, I mean, he's got years and years of just selling people out, and lots of people, his entire country. But the whole American connection, I think it makes Iraq and Afghanistan much more, it make much more sense. It makes all of that period where Blair gave his undying support to George Bush a lot more. Oh, well, okay, that's obvious. We should have seen that coming because they've trained them and they've put them through leadership programs and they've installed them into power. And what else are we going to see?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Johnny, just one thing before I carry on.
Yeah.
We're just nearly an hour in. Should we? Where's Johnny's stuff? Because we never said it at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Where can people...
What you've been up to, Johnny, you know, because the map someone who didn't know where his stuff is and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I am on newspaste.com. I'm on johnnyvedmore.com. But Newspaste is such like... it's on. You can find me on YouTube, Rockfin, Rumble, you know, all the channels. But a lot of the time now, every day, between 4 and 6 GMT, I'm on the Johnny Vedmore show on TNT radio. Yeah, man, it's amazing.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, they've not told me, like, they've not given me any instructions apart from go out and do your thing. And I've been able to get, like, the guests I want to get. I'd be able to talk about anything I want to talk about. And I've talked about everything you're not allowed to talk about, and it just seems like, wow, this is okay, this is brilliant. And it's having a great old time. Had a really great conversation today with Joe Allen of the War Room. He's a good fella and a really clever man. We've had a couple of conversations about Elon Musk, and we've been, you know, I've got to speak with some amazing people. William Happer the other day, he was there at Princeton when Oppenheimer's there as well. So they're, it's just like these people are some of them that my producer is wonderful. So she finds me some brilliant people, and I've just been having, like, really enjoying it. I've also been learning how to hone in on the writing skills. So, you know, for those who know me, I'm mostly present on X. I would still like to call it Twitter, but it is. I mean, they've got it now. It's never really going to go back. It is going on as X, and it's going to be the everything app eventually. You won't be able to get out of it, and I feel like I didn't pay for it, but they've made me a blue tick, and it means that it's about a really good platform for me to be able to get out on. So I'm mostly over there. If people want to, like, DM me, check out what I'm up to, because a lot of what I'm up to is crazy. It depends, you know. I do a lot of the live stuff. I do some different shows. I do the shows every day for TNT.
How long are you on for TNT then, Deja?
Eh?
How long are you on for on TNT?
2 hours a day from Monday to Friday. So it's like, it's a proper, I get about 4 guests in a day and talk about like a range of subjects. And it's really good because I mean, I've longed for the ability to, like, ask people questions. I want to challenge myself. I want to challenge everything I'm doing. I do 2 monologues a day, which now I'm writing about 1,500 words per monologue. So I'm writing about in total about 4,000 words a day at the moment, even before the articles. So I'm just honing my skills. I'm trying to learn how to bring people along with things by the monologues. I realized, especially through COVID, that a lot of what the problem is when any of us who we've got all of this knowledge and we start off saying it's all a scam, and you're getting fucking railroaded, and you should wise up, fool. And it honestly doesn't help people understand who don't want to understand, but it's there for the people who are just about to wake up. So it's not like it doesn't have a purpose, because I do it all the time too. I start at really high level. I've learned that you have to start at base level. You have to start. And so I like to describe this. I did a monologue the other day, which I posted up, which was about how, you know, we're being made to stay in our homes more. We know this. The future is the digital panopticon. For that to be the future, panopticon is one guard watching all of the cells. And you have to realize what the cell is. Yeah. And they're making our world smaller and smaller. So eventually, they're going to find excuses for us not to be able to travel out very far without a load of permission. And that'll be jumping through hoops, masses of money, all of those different things. And we'll just say, okay, we'll go to the beach and, you know, we'll go to Eastbourne and visit where John Bodkin Adams killed 130 on holiday or whatnot.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
It sounds like a good time. Let's go do it. And instead of going away, but then they're going to make 15-minute cities and say, well, you need a pass to get out of that city part to that part. So, you know, you're going to
have your Neuralink will blow up.
Yeah, yeah, and there'll be a deterioration of space until, you know, and we already see it. We know schools going online, libraries going to go online, everybody's working from home. There will be no offices. There will be no restaurants anymore. It's having people bring you out stuff. The restaurants will be for the people who can afford the restaurants because they're so expensive, because everything's in a box now. And it's all been refined so much that it creates the most amount of profit for the least in society. And that whole cycle, if you work it out, if you look at it, it just ends up with us in like a box. So if you describe your house to somebody or their house and you connect with the fact that you're going to get stuck in your home and you work your way out, they then come to a point where once you add in the points, you know, of what's happening all around us, the way society's changing, once you get further up, they're not just understanding the base level reality that they are being going to be forced to stay home more and more, and that's true, but they realize, oh, wait a minute, there's people who are building this world. There's people who are designing this. There's people who are deciding on what's happening. How is this being decided? And that's what I mean about like trying to bring people along, where you wait for the moment where they wake up for themselves. Mm. You can't. So you've got to manifest the possibility that they will go along with you for long enough that they'll realize themselves what is going on. And at the same time, you know, trying to give use logic to give back people's logics, let them see logical fallacies, let them start to understand the things that were taken out of the curriculum years ago, because otherwise you'd know what you were doing and they don't want you to know what you're doing. So that sort of, we got loads of people in Britain and in all around Europe, America, it makes no difference. They're all walking around like confused, not sure, just making it through the day, not thinking about too much in the future, because that gets really scary. And you're constantly, we're just like giving our money to the state. The state is saying austerity, austerity, war, war, austerity, austerity, war, war. And that's the same cycle we're going to keep going around until we like, no, that's not going to happen. But that can't happen until you bring people along. And so I'm starting to try and work on how to write things that give someone a premise that isn't so scary to them at first, is acceptable to them at first, and then they think about the concept more as they come along with it. And see if you know, I think it's probably a better way than most of what I do, which is writing. I mean, I'm still going to be writing long form articles. The article I got coming out about third way politics is like probably about 7,500 words. That's roughly what I average with loads of sources. But like the amount of people I have to do read throughs from, because the amount of people who aren't going to read an article is enormous.
I know.
It's getting bigger and bigger. So it's like, I found that I was very proud of my articles and they were getting lots of reads from readers. And then I was going on podcasts and people were understanding what I was saying from the article because I was going on podcasts.
Yeah. And it was doubling it up type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but you condense it into like a 4-minute TikTok video. Yeah, sorry, did I say 4 minutes? I mean, two or one and a half.
No, no, yeah. 30 seconds. Yeah.
Sorry, I can't even do 2 minutes. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that some of this could, and I think that's what you learn as you go along. As
I was
you
joking
refine your
skills. Yeah, I was joking. Yeah, we were joking that. Yeah.
You need to know, but it's what happens as you learn.
Do you know what I think as well, though? Obviously, the downside with what they did in 2020 obviously did wake people up. Now, I'm not saying all of them are 360 degrees and realize the whole thing's a scam. They might just think the COVID was a scam, for argument's sake. But that wake-up process, as we all know, comes with different points, doesn't it? You know, you become, fuck, have I been used on that one? Right, I'm angry. I'm going to tell everybody. Nobody's listening. Oh, nobody's listening. Right. Because you become this evangelist, that suddenly soapbox. You might as well be in the town centre saying the end of the world is nigh to these people. And it is a difficult one. And it is frustrating as well. We were all fortunate because in 2020, we knew this shit were happening. So.
Still had to fucking walk through all of that rigmarole.
Exactly, yeah. Can you imagine the download?
Still naive as well. I've said this one here before. I came home and told my missus, this is it. It's so obvious. Everyone's going to be, we're going to be marching in streets in days.
Yeah. Funnily enough, nobody's about Chris.
Tumbleweed.
Yeah.
I was so sure, but still so naive. You know, I just thought everyone's going to stand up and say.
Well, I don't think you're naive. You're positively naive. Like Johnny was saying there, that it's so frustrating that all these things that we talk about, the jigsaw puzzles, that people can't see it. Or even if they do see it, they go, right, it's a bit too much for me at the minute. I'm a bit busy at work, or I've got to do this job, or I've got to paint the fence, or whatever.
You know, with COVID, you can split it in. I was talking, this is one of the monologues I wrote a couple of weeks ago. It's like, you could split it up into, and you must, if you're going to understand it, split it up into that three portions. The bit where you didn't really know that there was a pandemic coming beforehand, but we knew there was a pandemic coming beforehand. So the people who were in the know were like, had this period where I like sat down with a friend and was like, look, with some of my friends and been like, there's going to be a pandemic. They're going to lock down society, this, that, the other. And they were like, yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen. Then it got announced like a month later or 2 months later, and people started to work out what was actually going to happen. They started like putting it in. And that was the moment where the era changed. So you got this one point that's pre-pandemic, during pandemic, after pandemic, where you see the reaction of people. And during it, they went into zombie mode. Like the majority of people went into, the majority of people with the head down. The ones who I would argue with saw me as evil at times. I would say evil for going against a narrative that is being given to them by all of the people they say they don't trust. That was one of the most frustrating parts of it. You know, they talk about not trusting Boris Johnson, not trusting this person, not trusting scientists, not trusting doctors. As soon as the pandemic started, they were like, I trust you.
What do you want me to do next?
Unbelievable.
Bang pots and pans. It's
true, actually, Johnny.
The majority of people just walked into it, just accepted it all. And afterwards, the difference now is so weird. It's so weird. I've had long conversations with people, and you can't do it in like too many people. You can't do it with the wrong people. You have to find the right people who both experienced the pandemic. Gave into it. Like I sat in a cafe the other day with two guys who are lovely guys. I really like them. And the one of them said to me, you know, he had all three. His wife had four. And then she decided to stop too. And he was like, I just knew it was just, I could feel the toll. It was, you know, I'm getting older and my body. And I was just like, I can't do this. And he said, you know, they talk about how they felt. And they, you could see there's this element of shame that they should have known, that they should have realized. And everybody was tricked. When you get hoodwinked like that, it makes you a slightly more twitchy about things that have happened in the future. And this is what our world is about now, because it's fifth generation warfare. They're going to make you slightly more twitchy on all different areas. So eventually you're just twitchy all over the place and you don't know what's going on and you don't know what's real and what's false. And along with that, I mean, there is no doubt AI is going to be a tool that throws the cat amongst the pigeons. Every single thing you can think of that could be bad can be created in not so long. People really don't realize quite what AI means. And then there's the three stages of AI, and it goes into something which is, we might not be able to ever
Chris says it's every dystopian book, film, whatever, is AI. It's been written about since H.G. Wells.
And I find the art from AI interesting, because to me, it's always, and I'm sure that's going to go away, but especially like 6 months, a year ago, had like a dark element to it. It always looked slightly disturbing to me. I don't know why. I can't even put my finger on it. It looked unsettling. I remember seeing a poster for I think it was a show on Amazon or something. I saw it in the bus shelters coming home, and I could tell it was AI. I could just tell the way it looked, and it just creeped me out. Do you know what I mean?
You can see a lot of the movie posters as well. Yeah. All the characters now, even the actors. They all look AI. They're all AI driven. They don't even look real anymore.
And that'll slowly, it's kind of like, you know, when we were playing computer games and we were like, you know, it was James Bond, GoldenEye, and it was all.
Yeah, I love that.
Amazing game. Yeah. Oh, man.
That was a game changer. That was.
game changer.
Yeah, it was a good game, that. Yeah.
But it was all blockheads, you know, when you got up close, it was funny. And we've seen the introduction of this. That was, I think, there was a load that was, it made sense for them to get games development up and running so that they could get to a point where you can have AI that's indistinguishable from humans. And we're like 5 years away.
Imagine the infiltration that's going to have with a kid with a VR headset on.
It's insane. It's insane. Yeah. There is,
and we've,
there is,
we've been financing it by purchasing the games, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the whole time it's just been developing and developing onward. We do this, we can't stop it. And whatever we're doing, and we work it out how it could be nefariously used, we can usually predict that it will end up with a nefarious use.
Yes.
Because the people who want that to happen will take power to make it happen.
The same companies are owned or started by military or CIA or some sort of nefarious organization that are funded, basically. Because, let's face it, Gates wouldn't be able to fund things if the governments didn't let him. They could close him up tomorrow. So he's only allowed, just like Elon Musk going to Russia to buy some intercontinental ballistic missiles, he's allowed to do that and then fire rockets up into the sky. You've got to have some kind of military clearance.
And Tesla Roadsters.
Yeah, and Tesla Roadsters, if I had that in the sky as well.
I was just firing me rockets, sir. Am I in trouble? Yeah, no. He knows exactly what's going on, does Elon Musk. He knows he's got I think what we're seeing now with the Republican Party, you've got all of these Democrats going over there, and it's again, this is one of the things that happens, is that the political parties kind of like move into the center and lose themselves and then synthesize. And then the purged parts of the party rise up as new entities that are political, and then they're either purged again or they move to the center slowly and do the same thing, because that's where power resides. You know, power
they're all drawn to that. They're all drawn to it, aren't they?
You can see what, like we were on about earlier, Johnny, you can see there's some little things for the future that you can see when they've probably drag the population down a little bit more. And the, you know, I think the future, the part of it is the 15 minutes here. Everyone crammed at home on VR headsets. The flying cars that I've been watching them get developed for years. Have you noticed they never get released? They've just
started talking about them, haven't they?
Well, they've been on about them for years. I've watched videos about them for years, but now they're actually working, aren't they? You can see these things working, but they wouldn't work with all the folk around in cities now. I'm making this up because I ain't got a bloody clue, but you can almost visualize that future, can't you? Everyone,
Blade Runner,
cities,
it's Blade Runner,
robot future. Dogs keeping everyone in check because humans want to do it to another human.
So what, like? That's the post-scarcity future where we no longer need to use loads and loads of something to be able to create something. That's like one of the big things in chemistry, physics, everything, is that if you look at Hermann Kahn's year 2000, one of the late stage technological advancements was that, basically being able to create a certain amount of energy with hardly anything put in.
That's alchemy.
Yeah. And to be perfectly honest, the closest we got is nuclear power, and they won't use it on purpose because then we'd enter a post-scarcity world. Once power is unlimited and free, the whole world changes really quickly and they have no control over it. So they've got to design the world to be and then let that go. And
what do you mean electric cars? It's just a lie. They're not actually good for the world.
Well, I don't know. Eventually, they just won't be electric.
No,
I don't know what they'll be, but there'll be something. And this is the thing about where we're on now. It's just crazy.
It's madness, isn't it?
It's the exponential growth of technology, and we're already at such a high rate of technology that means in 5-10 years' time, things are going to be mad. Things are going to be. We're entering into a realm where this is why they mapped out fifth generation warfare. You just won't know.
I mean, just look what happened. Look, the buttons are pressed in 2020, right? I never used Zoom before 2020. Yeah? I never used any of this shit. And I wasn't a technophobe, but I never used any of it. Now everybody's on it. Not just podcast, but work. Everything is on just this one platform.
And you're in your home.
In your home.
Well, it boomed in lockdowns, didn't it? Because that first time I ever went home in lockdown, spoke to a mate of mine in Sweden.
Yeah.
A few of us got on a Zoom call. I've never even done one before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who was your mate? Klaus Schwab?
But there are a lot of things put in place during lockdown. You know,
food deliveries
ramped up to whatever. Takeaways making more than restaurants. And like you were saying earlier, Johnny, you can see it. I work in restaurants, by the way. You can see it lining up to where there is no need for a restaurant, because also restaurateurs have realized they can make more money without having a restaurant and just delivering it to people who never leave the house.
They're telling you about it too. They're telling you like openly, like the C40 mayors, if you looked at in any of that, which is all of the big mayors in America, big 40 cities, they're gonna implement all of these globalist aligned policies, and you read it all and you get to a point where you're like, oh, people are allocated 3 new items of clothing a year. That's it.
made out of Essien.
Eventually you may only have three bits of clothing that you that means you'd be wearing the same clothes every day, but don't worry, you'd be in your home and they deliver
you don't need it. Yeah,
they don't matter because they're all grey.
I can't help thinking that I always think of the Planet of the Apes, you know, the eradicated zone. Is something along that line going to be in where?
Well, Chris, it's funny you say that because, and you'll remember this, Johnny. There is a zone. I mean, Schwab wrote about this. Well, one of his henchmen wrote the guy that wrote Own Nothing and Be Happy was one of the, he wasn't a young global leader, but he was part of that system. And he wrote that there would be, I felt, he wrote it as a story, but he wrote it like, I feel sorry for the people living outside the city because they're living in the dark ages. What they're basically saying is that there will be people out there cast out from the castle, if you like, as in the medieval times, that don't get the rewards.
Yeah, no, they don't get anything. They're going to get punished. They're going to, I mean, can you imagine the like, you've got these little farmsteads that they don't want you to have little townships that they don't want you to have. They don't want a competing vision. What's going to happen to them? All of the people inside big mega cities, they are, their whole lives are controlled. Every single thing they see is what they're meant to see. Every single thing they do is what they're meant to do.
Minority Report, isn't it?
That's... Yeah, and there's an element of Brave New World, because even in the when Herman Kahn did the year 2000, one of the later stage drugs or things, technologies, is a drug equivalent to Soma, so that you can have some form of like just complete indulgence, happiness, makes, again, brings you above that line of happiness. So your baseline, and that sounds nice, doesn't it? That sounds like.
But what happens if they've risen the happiness line and really is still below it, but even further below it, because they've dragged you that far down?
It's only down. It's only down, because you can't go. You can't, if they raise the line of happiness and you're happy all the time, you can't get happier. You can only get sadder. Yeah. So there's got to be something like.
Also,
that
if you got happy all the time, you just wonder, I'm looking like a lunatic.
Yeah.
And also with that happiness is a numbness, isn't it? You know, a numbness of not appreciating reality. Because part of the enjoyment of life is that...
Is the yin and yang, the
suffering,
down.
A bit of up and down, glasses full and it's a bit empty. And that's why we learn, isn't it? You don't learn anything from everything being fantastic.
But you're talking about something that happens naturally. This has been superimposed like a screensaver on us.
Well, that's what they're telling you now. If you're unhappy, you've got mental problems. But human beings, you know,
I was told that. I was put on loads of drugs. They had me on fluoxetine, clomipramine, mirtazapine at one point. They just like obviously that's the route they're going to take to try and like give an answer to you, like something's gonna, all it does is make you sicker in loads of different ways. Like you replace like an element of sadness that could give you some form of moment where you reevaluate your life completely,
realization,
and make yourself new again, and are born again in some way, which is what everybody has to go through, and they block that stage from happening. Probably because if that happened, people would become probably more awake rather than less awake. The more trials and tribulations we go through, the stronger we get. And we go through those trials and tribulations for the fact that it'll make us stronger. And only when you kind of get to that point in your life are you ever going to be like, okay, now I'm free of this. I don't need drugs. I don't need anything else. And, you know, it's just like now you can just like motor on and just leave.
You've got to ask yourself, how did people in medieval times, when they were doing the crop rotational system, how did they survive? They had nothing. A few rags, cow, and a plough. But they lived. And
hearty lives.
Yeah, yeah. They lived. And now, look how far we are away, mentally, as human beings, to that point. We can't, humans can't handle anything now. Again, it goes back to that mousetopia, doesn't it? They cram everybody into an area. And it just destroys them bit by bit.
What do you reckon? This is an idea. What if for 50 years, 60 years, we have, is it called a moratorium or something on all vaccines, all drugs, except for those needed in the case of a severe emergency? So no more anything getting pumped into us for 60 years and see if it's better than the previous 60 years. Because I think it would be a complete and utter, I mean, of course, there's some drugs that people need and it's required. But the majority of drugs people are taking, they don't need. There's other ways to sort it out.
Oh, yeah.
Plus all the secret drugs that are fired in there as well, Jenny. I think we'd be superhuman. I think we'd live in 260.
No, God, that'd be dangerous.
Well, especially with a lot of
right,
the
let's take drugs.
Yeah. Especially with a lot of the natural stuff that's around now, the knowledge of natural, whether it's from a herb perspective or a nutrient perspective or a diet perspective, a lot of knowledgeable people can get people back to health via certain things, not needing drugs. So,
no, but
imagine if that
were
doing.
Surrounded, aren't we?
No, but imagine if that were. I don't know. I'm speaking with a hypothetical positivity, but imagine if that was done in anger, like the war that the portraying on now, with all Gates coming in with his billions and throwing $1 billion here to help people. And that's why you know that it's a scam. Because everything can be sorted out. There's no water shortage in Africa. There never has been. There's enough water in Africa. They've got enough land to grow food.
Of how to expand water supply. And if you wanted to do it synthetically or artificially, you could, couldn't you?
Yes. Yeah, easily.
Distill the sea.
If you had distillers. But now they're saying that distillers cause too much CO2 release and blah, blah, blah. So let's all die of thirst and not fucking...
CO2 is needed.
Yeah.
Let the CO2 go. Someone
says something interesting the other day. If you notice, every mineral-rich country has got the poorest people in it.
Yeah. That's because Musk got his, cobalt mines there. Yeah.
Loving it.
He never mentions out about slave labour, does he, our friend Elon?